She's bouncing on her toes, full of energy. Her mother groans. Oh, yeah? Lady Diana nods. His name is Gil. He works with us. He's the guy with the red hair. He asked me to be his girlfriend. He has Down syndrome like me, and he likes video games, and I think I'm gonna marry him. Slow down, her mother says. Lady Diana spoke in one solid run-on sentence. So I'm not sure if her mother is telling her to slow down when she speaks or slow down on the wedding plans. Is he nice? I ask her. He has a PlayStation. But is he nice? He has lots of Pokemon cards. Is he nice, though? I repeat. She shrugs. I don't know. I'll have to ask him. I smile. Yes, do that. You should only marry people who are nice to you. Adeline looks at me. Do you know this kid? Gil? She says his name with contempt, and it makes me laugh. I shake my head. No, but I'll keep an eye out for him. I look at Lady Diana, and I'll make sure he's nice. Adeline looks relieved. Thank you. She stands up. Are you coming to the lunch on Sunday? What lunch? We're having a small lunch here for Mother's Day. I told Lady Diana to invite you. I feel the sting in the mention of that holiday. I've tried not to think about it. It'll be the first time I've experienced it outside of prison and in the same town as Diem. Lady Diana says, Kenna's daughter was kidnapped, so I didn't invite her. I immediately shake my head. She wasn't kidnapped. It's a long story. I don't have custody of her right now. I am mortified. Adeline can tell. Don't worry. The lunch is for everyone who lives here, Adeline says. We mostly host it for Ruth since her kids live so far away. I nod, because I feel like if I agree to come, she won't pressure me. And then maybe I won't have to explain why Lady Diana said my daughter was kidnapped. What can I bring? We've got it covered, she says. It was good to meet you. She starts to walk away, but spins around. Actually, do you know anyone with an extra table and a few chairs? I think we're gonna need more seating. I want to say no, since I don't know anyone but Ledger. But I don't want her to think I'm as lonely as I am. So I just nod and say, I can ask around. Adeline tells me it was nice to finally meet me, and then she walks toward their apartment. But Lady Diana lingers behind. When her mother is gone, she reaches for my phone. Can I play a game? I hand her the phone and she sits in the grass next to the picnic table. I need to get ready for my shift at Ward's. I'm gonna go change. You can play with my phone until I get back down. Lady Diana nods but doesn't look at me. I'd love to be able to save for a car so I no longer have to walk to work. But being forced to save up in order to just move away and make the Landrys more comfortable is really eating into my financial plans. I get to the bar early, but the back door is unlocked. I feel confident in what I need to do after having worked here last week. I put on my apron and start to get the sink water ready when Roman walks to the back.
You're early, he says.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how bad traffic would be. Roman laughs. He knows I don't have a car. Who used to wash dishes before Ledger hired me? I ask him.
Everyone. We all pitched in when we had a spare second. Or we'd wait until the end of the night and take turns staying late to clean.
He grabs his apron.
I doubt we'll ever want to go back down an employee after this. It's nice actually getting to leave when the bar closes.
I wonder if Roman knows my position is only temporary. He probably does.
It's gonna be busy tonight, he warns. Last day of finals were today. I have a feeling we're gonna see a rush of college kids.
Marianne will love that. I pour liquid soap into the bin. Hey, quick question. I face him. There's a luncheon at my apartment on Sunday. They need an extra table. Do you guys happen to have one here? Roman nudges his head toward the ceiling.
Up in storage, I think.
He looks at his phone screen.
We still have a while before we open. Let's go check.
I turn off the water and follow him out to the alley. He pulls a ring of keys from his pocket and flips through them.
Excuse the mess,
he says, inserting a key into the door.
I usually keep it a little cleaner up here in case we have a runt, but it's been a while.
He pulls the door open to reveal a well-lit stairwell. What's a runt? I ask as I follow him up to the apartment. The stairwell curves after the last step, and the door opens up to a space about the size of the back kitchen of the bar. It's the same floor plan, but it's finished out to actually be a living space.
Runts are what we call the leftover drunk people at the end of the night that no one claims. Sometimes we put them on the couch up here until they sober up and remember where they need to go.
He flips on a light, and the couch is the first thing I see. It's old and worn, and I can tell it's comfortable just by looking at it. There's a stand with a flat-screen TV on it a few feet away from a king-size bed. It's an efficiency apartment, complete with a kitchen and a small dining room with a window that overlooks the street in front of the bar. It's twice the size of mine, and actually has a little charm. It's cute. I point to the counter in the kitchen when I see at least 30 coffee mugs lined up against the wall. You addicted to coffee or just coffee mugs?
It's a long story.
Roman flips through his keys again.
There's a storage area behind this door. Last time I looked, there was a table, but I can't make any promises.
He gets the door unlocked, and when he pulls it open, there are 2 6-foot tables stacked vertically against the wall. I help him as he pulls one out.
You need both of them?
One will do. We lean the table against the couch, and then he closes and locks the door. We both lift one end to carry it downstairs.
We can leave it at the bottom of the stairwell for now, and then throw it in the back of Ledger's truck tonight,
he says. Awesome, thank you.
What kind of luncheon is it?
Just a potluck. I don't want to admit it's for Mother's Day. It would seem like I'm celebrating the holiday, and I don't want to be judged. Not that Roman seems like the judgmental type. He actually seems like a decent person, and he's handsome enough that I'd probably look at him differently if I didn't already know what it was like to kiss Ledger. I can't look at another man's mouth without wishing I was looking at Ledger's. I hate that I still find him as attractive as I did the first night I walked into his bar. It would be so much easier to be attracted to someone else, anyone else. Roman props the table up at the bottom of the stairwell.
Do you need chairs?
Chairs, shit, yes. I didn't think about chairs. He heads back upstairs and I follow him. So, how do you and Ledger know each other?
He's the one who injured me playing football.
I pause at the top of the stairs. He ended your football career, and now you're friends? I'm not sure I follow how that trajectory could have occurred. Roman eyes me carefully as he unlocks the storage room door again.
You really don't know this story?
I shake my head. I've been sort of preoccupied for several years. He laughs quietly.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll give you the condensed version.
He opens the door and starts grabbing chairs.
I had to have knee surgery after the injury,
Roman says.
I was in a lot of pain. Got addicted to pain pills and spent every penny I made in the NFL on my addiction.
He sets 2 chairs outside the door and then grabs 2 more.
Let's just say I fucked up my life pretty good. Word got back to Ledger and he tracked me down. I think he felt somewhat responsible, even though what he did to my knee was an accident. But he showed up when everyone else bowed out. He made sure I got the help I needed.
I don't know what to do with all the information he just handed me. Oh. Wow. Roman has all 6 chairs stacked against the wall before he closes the door. He grabs 4 and I grab 2, and we head back down.
Ledger gave me a job and rented this apartment to me when I got out of rehab 2 years ago.
We set the chairs against the wall before walking outside.
I honestly don't even remember how it started, but he'd give me a coffee mug on the weekly anniversary of my sobriety. He still gives me a mug every Friday, but now he just does it to be an asshole because he knows I'm running out of space.
That's honestly kind of adorable. Hopefully you like coffee.
I survive on coffee. You don't want to be around me if I haven't had it.
Roman's eyes lock on something behind me. I turn around to find Ledger standing between his truck and the back door to the bar. He's staring at us, Roman doesn't pause like I do. He keeps walking toward the back door to the bar.
Kenna is borrowing a table and some chairs for a thing she's having Sunday. We put them at the bottom of the stairwell. Grab them before you leave.
Nicole,
Ledger says, correcting Roman.
Nicole, whatever, Roman says. Don't forget, tables, chairs, ride home.
He disappears into the bar. Ledger looks at the ground for a moment before staring at me.
What kind of thing do you need a table for?
I shove my hands in my back pockets. It's just a lunch on Sunday. At my apartment. He continues to stare at me as if he wants more of an explanation.
Sunday is Mother's Day.
I nod and start walking toward the door. Yep. Might as well celebrate it with the mothers at my apartment since I can't celebrate the day with my own daughter. My voice is clipped when I walk inside. Maybe a bit accusatory. The door falls shut behind me with a thud, and I walk straight to the sink and turn on the water. I grab the headphones Marianne let me borrow last week, but this time I plug them into my phone now that I finally have one. I loaded up an audiobook to get me through the shift. I can feel a slight breeze meet my neck when Ledger enters the building. I wait a few seconds, and then look over my shoulder to see where he is and what he's doing. He's walking toward the front, staring straight ahead the whole time. I can't tell what he's thinking when he wears that stoic expression. The thing about Ledger's expressions is I haven't really seen many of them since the first night he was working. He seemed loose and carefree that night behind the bar. But since the moment he found out who I was, he seems inflexible in my presence. Almost like he's doing everything he can to keep me from knowing his thoughts.
Chapter 26. Ledger. The joints in my body feel locked in place as I attempt to execute the motions of the evening with a stiffness that should be the result of a hangover. But I'm not hungover. Just irritated? Is that what this is? I'm reacting like an asshole. I know it, and Roman knows it, but my maturity can't seem to catch up and take over. How long has Kenna been here? How long were they in Roman's apartment? Why did she seem short with me? Why the fuck do I care? I don't know what to do with these feelings, so I wad them up and try to keep them stuffed in my throat, or my stomach, or wherever people tuck away this shit. I don't need to start this shift with an attitude. It's the end of finals week. Tonight is going to be insane enough as it is. I turn on the jukebox, and the first song that comes on is one left over from last night's cue. If We Were Vampires, by Jason Isbell. Great. An epic love song. Just what Kenna needs. I walk to the back and notice she's got her headphones on. I grab all the fruit I normally slice at the beginning of my shift and take it to the front. I'm slicing up a lime, possibly a little too angrily, when Roman says, "You good?" "I'm fine." I try to say it like I would normally say it, but I don't know how I would normally say it because Roman never has to ask me if I'm good. I'm usually always good. "Rough day?" he asks. "Great day." He sighs and reaches over, pulling the knife out of my hand. I press my palms into the counter and turn to look at him. He's leaning casually on his elbow, twirling the knife in a circle with his finger while he stares at me. "It was nothing," he says. "She borrowed a table and some chairs. We were upstairs for 3 minutes." I didn't say anything. "You didn't have to." He releases an exasperated laugh. "Shit, man. I didn't peg you for the jealous type." I reach for my knife and start slicing through the limes again. "It has nothing to do with jealousy." "What is it then?" he asks. I'm about to answer him, probably with some bullshit lie, but the door swings open and four guys spill into the bar. Loud, ready to celebrate, possibly already drunk. I cut our conversation short and prepare for a shift I'm not at all in the mood for. 8 long hours later. Roman and I are in the alley loading the table and chairs into the back of my truck. We've barely had time to think tonight, much less finish our conversation from earlier. Not much is said between us. We're both tired, and I think Roman is treading carefully. But the more I think about him and Kenna being in his apartment together, the more it bothers me. I could see Roman being attracted to her. And I don't know Kenna that well, but she'd probably be desperate enough to attach herself to anyone who could be an excuse for her to stay in this town. I feel guilty even having that thought. "We gonna talk about this?" Roman asks. I slam my tailgate shut, and then I grip my truck with one hand and my jaw with the other. I choose my words cautiously as I begin to speak. "If you start something up with her, she'll find an excuse not to leave town. The whole point of her working here is so she can save up money and leave." Roman rolls his head, like rolling his eyes wouldn't convey his irritation enough. "You think I'm trying to hook up with her? You think I would do that to you after everything you've done for me? I'm not making her off limits because I'm jealous. I need her to leave town so Patrick and Grace's life can go back to normal." Roman laughs. "You are so full of shit. You played in the NFL. You own a lucrative business. You're building a ridiculous fucking house. You aren't broke, Ledger. If you wanted her to leave town, you would have written her a check to get rid of her." I'm tense as fuck, so I tilt my head to the side until my neck pops. "She wouldn't have taken a handout. Did you even try?" "I didn't have to. I know Kenna, and she wouldn't have taken a handout." "Just be careful with her, Roman. She'd do anything to be in DM's life." "Well, at least we agree on that part," he says, right before disappearing into the stairwell to his apartment. Fuck him. Fuck him, because he's right. As much as I can try to deny it, I'm not acting this way because I'm worried Kenna will stay in town longer. I'm upset because the thought of her leaving has me more on edge than the thought of her sticking around. How did this happen? How did I go from absolutely loathing this woman to feeling something else entirely? Am I that pathetic a friend to Scotty? Am I that disloyal to Patrick and Grace? I didn't hire Kenna because I want her to leave. I hired her because I like being in her presence. I hired her because I think about kissing her again every time my head meets the pillow at night. I hired her because I'm hoping Patrick and Grace have a change of heart. And I want to be around if that happens.
Chapter 27. Kenna. My face is on fire when I back away from the door. I heard every word Ledger said to Roman. I even heard some of the words he didn't say. I walk to the storage room and grab my bag as soon as I hear him walking up the back steps. When he opens the door, I can't help but wonder what thoughts are going through his head when his eyes land on me. Since the moment he offered me this job, I've been convinced it's because he hates me and wants me to leave town. But Roman is right. He could pay me off and send me on my way if that's what he really wanted. Why am I still here? And why is he warning Roman about me? Like my intentions aren't good. I didn't ask for this job. He offered it to me. That he would think I'd use Roman to get to my daughter feels like a slap in the face, if that's even what he was insinuating. I'm not sure what he was insinuating, or if he was just being oddly territorial over me.
"You ready?"
Ledger asks. He flips off the lights and holds open the back door for me. As I pass him, there's a different kind of tension between us. It isn't a tension necessarily related to Diem anymore. It's a tension that seems to exist simply because we're in each other's presence. As we head to my apartment, I feel short of air. I want to roll down the window, but if I do, I'm worried he'll know it's because I can't seem to breathe properly in his presence. I glance at him a couple of times, attempting to be discreet. But there's a new tightness to his jaw that isn't usually there. Is he thinking about everything Roman said to him? Is he upset because he agrees? Or upset because Roman was completely off the mark?
Did you get served with the restraining order this week?
He asks. I clear my throat to make room for the tiny no I speak out loud. I Googled it on my phone and read that it can take about 1 to 2 weeks for a restraining order request to process. I'm looking out my window and Ledger says,
You got a phone?
Yeah, a few days ago. He grabs his own phone and hands it to me.
Put in your info.
I don't like how bossy that seems. I don't grab his phone. Instead, I look at it, and then at him. What if I don't want you to have my number? He pegs me with his stare.
I'm your boss. I need a way to contact my employees.
I huff because I hate that he makes a valid point. I grab his phone and text myself so I'll have his number too. But when I save my information, I list myself as Nicole rather than Kenna. I don't know who has access to his phone. Better safe than sorry. I set his phone back in his phone holder as he pulls into my parking lot. He swings open his door as soon as he kills his truck. He grabs the table and I try to help him, but he says,
I've got it. Where do you want it?
Do you mind taking it upstairs? He heads that way and I grab a couple of chairs. By the time I make it to my stairwell, he's already heading back down to grab the rest of the chairs. He steps to the side, pressing his back against the railing to make room for me. But when I pass him, I can smell him. He smells like limes and bad decisions. The table is propped up next to my apartment door. I unlock my door and then set the chairs next to the wall. I look out the window, and Ledger is grabbing the rest of the chairs from his truck. So I glance around my apartment to see if anything needs rectifying before he comes back up. There's a bra on the couch, so I cover it up with a pillow. Ivy is at my feet meowing, and I notice her food and water bowls are empty. I'm refilling them as Ledger taps on the door and then opens it. He brings the chairs and then the table inside.
Anything else?
He asks. I set Ivy's water bowl down in the bathroom, and she goes straight for it. I close the door and shut her in the bathroom so she doesn't try to escape through the open front door. No. Thanks for the help. I walk to the door so I can lock it after Ledger leaves, but he just stands by it, gripping the door handle.
What time do you get off work at the grocery store tomorrow?
4.
Our T-ball game should end around then. I can give you a ride, but I might be a little late.
It's okay. I can walk. The weather is supposed to be nice. He says.
Okay.
But he lingers in the doorway for an uncomfortable beat. Should I tell him I overheard him? I probably should. If there's one thing spending 5 years without a life taught me, it's that I don't want to waste a single second of the life I have left being scared of confrontation. My cowardice is a big part of why my life has turned out the way it has. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop, I say, wrapping my arms around myself. But I heard your conversation with Roman. Ledger's eyes flick away from my face, like that makes him uncomfortable. Why did you tell him to be careful around me? Ledger presses his lips together in thought. His throat slowly rolls with his swallow, but he still doesn't say anything. He just looks torn as his face takes on what looks like a world of pain. He leans his head against the doorframe and looks down at his feet.
Was I wrong?
His question is barely above a whisper, but it feels like a scream echoing inside of me.
Would you not do anything for Diem?
I blow out a frustrated breath. That feels like a trick question. Of course I'd do anything for her, but not at the expense of others. I don't think. That's not a fair question. He locks eyes with me again. And I can feel my pulse beginning to pound.
Roman is my best friend,
he says.
No offense, but I barely know you, Kenna.
He might not know me, but he feels like the only person I know.
I still don't know if what happened between us the first night you showed up at my bar was authentic, or if it was all an act to get to Diem.
I rest my head against the wall and watch Ledger's expression. He's looking at me with patience and not at all with judgment. It's like he truly does want to know if the kiss we shared was authentic. It's almost as if it meant something to him. It was authentic, but it also wasn't. I didn't know who you were until you said your name, I admit. I was literally sitting on your lap when I realized you knew Scotty. Seducing you wasn't part of some master plan. He gives my answer time to sink in, and then he nods gently.
That's good to know.
Is it? I flatten my back against the wall. Because it doesn't feel like it even matters. You still don't want me to meet my daughter. You're still hoping I leave town. None of it matters. Ledger dips his head until our eyes meet again. He's looking at me pointedly when he says,
There is nothing in this world that would make me happier than you getting to meet Diem. If I knew how to change their minds, I would do it in a heartbeat, Kenna.
My breath shakes upon release. His confession is everything I needed to hear. I close my eyes because I don't want to cry, and I don't want to watch him leave. But until this moment, I wasn't sure if he even wanted me in DM's life. I feel the heat of his arm next to my head, and I keep my eyes closed, but I'm sucking in small gasps of air. I can hear his breaths, and then I can feel them on my cheek. And then my neck, as if he's moving in on me. I feel surrounded by him in this moment, and I'm scared if I open my eyes, I'll realize it's all in my head, and that he actually walked out of my open apartment door. But then he exhales, and the warmth rolls down my neck and shoulder. I barely crack open my eyes to find him towering over me, his hands on either side of the wall beside my head. He's just hovering. Like he can't decide whether he should leave or reenact our kiss from the night we met. Or maybe he's just waiting on me to make some kind of move, or decision, or mistake. I don't know what compels me to lift my hand and place it on his chest, but when I do, he sighs as if that's exactly what he wanted me to do. But I don't know if I'm touching his chest because I want to push him away, or because I want to pull him closer. Either way, there's a warmth between us that builds with his sigh, and he rests his forehead lightly against mine. There have been so many choices and consequences and feelings packed into the space we've kept between us since we met, but Ledger pushes through all of it and presses his lips to mine. Heat pulses through me like a heartbeat, and I sigh into his mouth. His tongue skims my top lip, fogging my thoughts. He cradles my head and deepens our kiss, and it's intoxicating. His mouth is warmer than I remember it being the first time we kissed. His hands feel more gentle. His tongue feels less daring. There's a carefulness in his kiss, one I'm too afraid to dissect, because I already feel so much it's dizzying. The warmth of him envelops me, and just when I start to cling to him, he pulls away. I suck in air while he studies my face. It's as if he's trying to get a read on my expression, scanning me for signs of regret or desire. I'm sure he can see both. I want his kiss, but the thought of having to say goodbye to more than just the idea of Diem is enough to stop me from allowing this to happen. Because the closer I grow to Ledger, both emotionally and physically, the more I'd be putting his relationship with Diem at risk. As much as his kiss makes me feel, it's nothing compared to the heartache that would follow if the Landrys found out he's seeing me behind their backs. I can't have that hanging over my head. He starts to lean in again, making my entire body feel unstable. But I somehow find the strength to shake my head. Please don't, I whisper. It hurts enough already. Ledger pauses right before his mouth connects with mine. He draws back and lifts his hand, gently gliding his fingertips over my jaw.
I know. I'm sorry.
We both fall quiet, unmoving. I wish I was processing how to make this work between us, but I'm processing how to not let it hurt, because it can't work. He eventually pushes off the wall, stepping away from me.
I feel so fucking...
He runs a hand through his hair as he searches for the right word.
Helpless. Useless.
He walks out the door after settling on both words.
I'm sorry.
I hear him mutter as he walks away. I close my door, lock it, and then release every breath I've held in tonight. My heart is pounding. The apartment seems really warm now. I turn down the thermostat and let Ivy out of the bathroom. We curl up on the couch together, and I grab my notebook. Dear Scotty, do I owe you an apology for what just happened? I'm not quite sure what just happened. Ledger and I definitely had a moment. But was it a good one? A bad one? It felt more sad than anything. What if it happens again? I'm not sure I'm going to be strong enough to ask him not to touch me in all the ways we'd probably be touching each other right now if I didn't blurt out the words, please don't. But if we act on anything we're feeling, he's eventually going to have to choose. And he won't choose me. I wouldn't let him. And I'd think so much less of him if he didn't choose DM. And what's to come of me when that happens? I'll not only lose my chance with DM, but I'll lose Ledger, too. I've already lost you for good. That's hard enough. How many losses can one person take before they just throw in the fucking towel, Scotty? Because it sure is starting to feel like I'm all out of wins here. Love, Kenna.
Chapter 28. Ledger. DM's arms are tight around my neck as I give her a piggyback ride across the parking lot toward Grace's car. The T-ball game just ended, and DM is making me carry her because she said her legs were soaking sore. I want to go to work with you, she says. You can't. Kids aren't allowed in bars. I go to your bar with you sometimes. Yeah, when we're closed, I clarify. That doesn't count. We'll be open tonight, and it's busy, and I won't be able to keep an eye on you. Not to mention her mother, who she doesn't even know exists, will be there. You can come work for me when you turn 18. That's a long, long, long time away. You'll be dead. Hey now, Grace says defensively. I'm a lot older than Ledger, and I don't plan on being dead when you're 18. I get DM secured into her car seat. How old will I be when everybody dies? She asks. Nobody knows when anyone will die, I tell her. But if we all live until we're old, we'll all be old together. How old will I be when you're 200? Dead old, I say. Her eyes grow wide, and I immediately shake my head. We'll all be dead. No one lives to be 200. My teacher is 200. Mrs. Bradshaw is younger than me, Grace pipes up from the front seat. Stop telling lies. DM leans forward and whispers, Mrs. Bradshaw really is 200. I believe you. I kiss her on top of the head. Good job today. Love you. I love you too. I want to go to work with... I close DM's door before she finishes her sentence. I don't normally rush them off this way, but as we were walking through the parking lot, I received a text from Kenna. All it said was, please come get me. It's not quite 4 yet. She said she didn't need a ride when I asked her yesterday, so my concern was immediately heightened when I got the text. I'm already to my truck when Grace and DM drive away. Patrick couldn't make the game today because he's working on the jungle gym. I was planning on going home for a couple of hours to see the progress and help before I went to the bar. But now I'm on my way to the grocery store to check on Kenna. I'll text Patrick when I get there to let him know I'm not stopping by. We're almost finished with the jungle gym. DM's birthday is coming up, which means today was supposed to be the big day. Leah's and my wedding. We planned on going to Hawaii just a week after the wedding, and I remember being stressed that we wouldn't be back for DM's birthday party. That was another point of contention between Leah and me. She didn't like that DM's fifth birthday was almost as big a deal to me as our honeymoon. I'm sure Patrick and Grace would have been willing to move the birthday party, but Leah acted like DM's fifth birthday was a major conflict with our honeymoon before she even inquired about them moving the party. And that ended up becoming one of the first of many red flags. I gave Leah the trip to Hawaii after our breakup. I had already paid for it, but I'm not sure if she's still going. Hopefully she is, but it's been 3 months since we've even spoken. I feel like I have no clue what's going on in her life now. Not that I want to know. It's strange, being involved in every facet of another human being, and then suddenly not knowing anything. It's also strange thinking you know someone, but then later realizing maybe you didn't know them at all. I feel that with Leah, and I'm starting to feel that about Kenna, but in the opposite way. With Kenna, I feel like I judged her too poorly in the beginning. With Leah, I feel like I judged her too favorably. I probably should have texted Kenna to let her know I was on my way, because I spot her walking alone on the side of the road about a quarter of a mile away from the store. Her head is down, and she's got both hands gripping the strap of her tote bag on her shoulder. I pull over on the opposite side of the road, but she doesn't even notice my truck, so I tap on the horn. It gets her attention. She looks both ways and then crosses the road and climbs into my truck. A heavy sigh emanates from her when she closes her door. She smells like apples, just like she smelled last night in the doorway of her apartment. I could fucking punch myself for last night. She drops her bag between us and pulls an envelope out of it. She shoves it at me. I got it. The restraining order. I was served as I was walking out of the store to put groceries into someone's car. It was mortifying, Ledger. I read over the forms, and I'm confused about how a judge even granted it, but when I see Grady's name, it all makes sense. He probably vouched for Patrick and Grace, and might have even embellished the truth a little bit. He's that type. I bet his wife is loving this. I'm surprised she didn't bring it up at the ball field today. I fold it back up and stick it in her purse. It doesn't mean anything, I say, attempting to comfort her with my lie. It means everything. It's a message. They want me to know they aren't changing their minds. She pulls on her seatbelt. Her eyes and cheeks are red, but she isn't crying. It looks like she's probably cried it out already, and I got to her in the aftermath. I pull back onto the road feeling heavy. What I said last night about feeling useless, it's the most accurate term for what I am right now. I can't help Kenna, other than how I'm already helping her. Patrick and Grace aren't changing their minds, and any time I try to approach the subject with them, they're immediately defensive. It's difficult, because I agree with why they don't want Kenna around, but I also vehemently disagree. They would cut me out of DM's life before they would agree to add Kenna into it. That's what scares me the most. If I push the subject too much, or if they find out I'm even remotely on Kenna's side, I'm afraid they'll start viewing me as a threat, the same way they view Kenna. The worst part is, I don't blame them for how they feel about Kenna. The impact of her choices has been detrimental to their lives. But the impact of their choices is becoming detrimental to her life. Fuck. There's no good answer. I've somehow immersed myself in the depths of an impossible situation, one that doesn't leave a single solution that won't lead to at least one person suffering. Do you want to take the night off work? I completely understand if she doesn't feel up to it, but she shakes her head. I need the hours. I'll be fine. It was just embarrassing, even though I knew it was coming. Yeah, but I figured Grady would have the decency to serve you at home. It's not like your home address isn't at the top of the order. I turn right at the next light to get to the bar, but something tells me Kenna might need an hour or so before she moves from one shift to the next. You want a snow cone? I'm not sure if that's a stupid resolution to an issue this serious, but snow cones are always the answer for me and Diem. Kenna nods, and I think I might even see a hint of a smile. Yeah, a snow cone sounds perfect.
Chapter 29. Kenna. I'm leaning my head against the passenger window of his truck, watching him stride up to the snow cone stand with his tattoos and his sex appeal to order two rainbow snow cones. Why does he have to do nice things that make him so attractive? I came here once with Scotty, but Scotty didn't look out of place ordering snow cones. We sat at a picnic table that used to be to the left of the snow cone stand, but it's a parking lot now, and the picnic table is nowhere to be seen. All the seating areas have been replaced by plastic tables with pink umbrellas. I only texted Ledger and asked for a ride because of Amy. She found me in the bathroom about to have a panic attack and asked what was wrong. I couldn't bear to tell her someone had filed a restraining order against me. Instead, I just told her the truth, that sometimes I have panic attacks, but that it would pass and I was sorry. And then I pathetically begged her not to fire me. She looked so sad for me, but she also laughed. Why would I fire you? You're the only worker I have who actually wants to work double shifts. So you had a panic attack. Big deal. She talked me into finding a ride home because she didn't trust me to have to walk all that way. I didn't want to tell her Ledger is the only person I know in town. So I texted him, more to reassure her that I wouldn't be alone. It felt good to be worried about by someone. There's a lot I know I need to be grateful for, and Amy is one of those things. It's just really hard to be grateful when there's only one thing I want in my life, and I feel like I'm just getting further and further from that. Ledger returns to the truck with our snow cones. There are sprinkles on mine, and I know that's a small thing, but I make note of it. Maybe if I acknowledge all the good things, no matter how small, they'll add up to make the bad thing in my life less painful. Do you ever bring Diem here? I ask him. He uses a spoon to point down the street.
The dance studio is about a block that way,
he says.
I drop her off and Grace picks her up. She's hard to say no to, so I'm a regular here.
He sticks a spoon in his mouth and then opens his wallet and pulls out a business card. There are tiny little snow cone holes punched around it.
Close to getting a free one,
he says, tucking it back into his wallet. It makes me laugh. Impressive. I wish I would have gone up to order with him just so I could see him hand in his snow cone punch card.
Banana and lemonade.
He looks over at me after taking a bite.
That's her favorite combination.
I smile. Is yellow her favorite color? He nods. I stick my spoon into the yellow part of my snow cone and dig out a bite. These little tidbits he gives me are something else I'm appreciative of. They're tiny parts of the whole. And maybe if he gives me enough of them, it won't hurt as bad when I have to leave. I try to think about something to talk about that isn't Diem. What does the house you're building look like? Ledger picks up his phone and checks the time, and then puts his truck in reverse.
I'll take you to see it. Rosie and Roman can cover us for a while.
I take another bite and don't say anything. I don't think he realizes what his willingness to show me his new house means to me. The Landrys might have filed a restraining order against me, but at least Ledger trusts me. I have that to cling to, and I cling to it hard. Once we're at least 15 miles outside of town, we turn into an area with a big wooden entryway that says Cheshire Ridge, and then we begin to make our way up a winding road. The trees cover the road like they're hugging it. The sides of the road are dotted with mailboxes every quarter to half a mile. None of the houses can be seen from the road. The mailboxes are the only clues that people even live out here, because the trees are so dense. It's peaceful and secluded. I can see why he chose this area. We come to a piece of property that's so thick with trees, you can't even see most of the driveway from the road. There's a stake in the ground where I assume the mailbox will eventually go. There are columns that look like they'll end up being a privacy gate someday. Do you have close neighbors out here? He shakes his head.
Not for a half a mile, at least. The property is on a 10-acre tract.
We pull onto the property, and eventually, a house begins to take shape through the trees. It isn't what I expected. This house isn't your average, large, manor-style home with a peaked roof. It's spread out and flat and unique. Built of some kind of material I don't recognize. I didn't peg Ledger to want something so modern and unusual. I don't know why I pictured a log cabin or something more traditional. Maybe because he mentioned he and Roman were building it, and I just expected it to be a little less complicated. We get out of the truck, and I try to imagine DM out here, running around this yard, playing on the patio, roasting marshmallows in the fire pit out on the back deck. Ledger shows me around, but I can't grasp this type of lifestyle, not even for my daughter. The countertops and the outdoor kitchen that overlook the backyard are probably worth more than everything I've ever owned in my entire life added up. There are three bedrooms, but the main bedroom is the highlight for me, with a ridiculous closet almost as big as the bedroom itself. I admire the house and listen to him talk excitedly about everything he and Roman have done by hand. And while it is impressive, it's also depressing. This is a house my daughter will spend time in, which means it's likely a house I'll never return to again. As much as I enjoy watching him show off his space, I also don't want to see it now that I'm here. And to be honest, it kind of makes me sad to know that he won't be living across from Diem. I'm starting to really like him as a person, and knowing he's a constant in her life is comforting. But he won't be across the street from her when he moves out here, and it makes me wonder if that's going to make her sad. The back door to the huge patio overlooking rolling hills opens up like an accordion. He pushes it to one side, and I walk out onto the back deck. The sun is about to set, and it's probably one of the best views of the sunset in this entire town. It lights up the tops of the trees below us and makes them look like they're on fire. There isn't any patio furniture yet, so I sit down on the steps and Ledger takes a seat next to me. I haven't said much, but he doesn't need the compliments. He knows how beautiful this place is. I can't imagine what it's costing him to build. Are you rich? It just comes out. I rub my face after I ask it and say, "Sorry, that was rude." He laughs and rests his elbows on his knees.
"It's okay. The house is cheaper than it looks. Roman and I have done most of the work by hand over the last couple of years, but I made good investments with the money I got from my football contract. It's mostly gone now, but I got a business out of it, and now a home. Can't complain."
I'm happy for him. At least life works out for some people. We all have our failures, though. I suppose I'm curious what Ledger's failures are. "Wait," I say, remembering at least one thing that didn't quite work out for him. "Weren't you supposed to get married this weekend?" Ledger nods.
2 hours ago, actually.
"Are you sad about it?"
"Of course,"
he says.
"I don't regret the decision. But I am sad it didn't work out. I love her."
He said love, as in present tense. I wait for him to correct himself, but he doesn't. And then I realize that wasn't a mistake. He loves her still. I guess realizing your life isn't compatible with someone else's doesn't erase the feelings that are there. There's a tiny flame of jealousy suddenly flickering in my chest. How did you propose to her?
Do we really have to talk about this?
He's laughing like the subject is more awkward than sad. Yes, I'm nosy. He exhales and then says,
I asked her dad for permission first, and then I bought her the ring she'd been not so subtle about wanting. I took her to dinner on our second anniversary and had this big proposal planned in the park down the street from the restaurant. Her friends and family were there waiting. And then I got down on one knee and proposed. It was your typical Instagram-worthy engagement.
Did you cry?
No, I was too nervous.
Did she? He cocks his head like he's trying to think back.
I don't think so. Maybe a tear or two. It was dark, which I didn't take into consideration. So the footage of the proposal came out kind of shitty. She complained about that the next day. That she wouldn't have a good video and I should have proposed before the sunset.
She sounds fun. Ledger smiles.
Honestly, you'd probably like her. I keep saying things that make her sound bad, but we had a lot of fun together. When we were together. I didn't think about Scotty as much. Things felt light with her because of that.
I look away when he says that. Do I only remind you of him? Ledger says nothing in response to my question. He doesn't want to hurt my feelings, so he just chooses not to answer. But his silence makes me feel like I want to flee. I start to stand up because I'm ready to leave. But as soon as I begin to stand, he grabs my wrist and gently pulls me back down.
Sit. Let's stay until the sun sets.
I sit back down, and it takes about 10 minutes for the sun to sink down into the trees. Neither of us talks. We just watch the rays disappear, and the tips of the trees return to their natural, fireless colors. It's dusk now, and without electricity, the house behind us is quickly growing dark. Ledger has a contemplative look about him when he says,
I feel guilty.
Welcome to my constant state. Why?
For building this house. I feel like Scotty would be disappointed in me. Diem gets so sad every time we bring up the fact that I'm putting my other house up for sale.
Why did you build this house then?
It's been my dream for a long time now. I bought the land and started drafting the design back when Diem was just a baby. Before I knew just how much I would love her.
He cuts his eyes to mine.
Don't get me wrong. I loved her then, but it was different. She started to walk and talk and develop her unique personality, and we became inseparable. And over time, this place started to feel less like my future home and more like...
He tries to come up with the word, but he can't. A prison? Ledger looks at me like I'm the first person to understand him.
Yes, exactly. I feel like I'm locked into it now. But the idea of not seeing Diem every day is really starting to weigh on me. It'll change our relationship. With my schedule, I'll probably see her once a week if I'm lucky. I think that's why I've been taking my time building it. I don't know that I'm really looking forward to moving out here.
Then sell it. He laughs, like that's an absurd idea. I'm serious. I'd much rather you live across the street from my daughter than clear across town. I know I can't be in her life like I wish I could, but there's some comfort in knowing you are. Ledger stares at me for a long beat after I say that. Then he stands up and reaches out for my hand.
We should get to work.
Yeah, don't want to piss off the boss. I grab his hand and stand up, and when I do, I'm suddenly way too close to him. He doesn't back away or let go of my hand. And now he's looking at me from just a few inches away, with an intensity I feel slide down my spine. Ledger threads his fingers through mine, and when our palms touch, the feeling that surges through me makes me wince Ledger feels it too. I can see it in the way his eyes fill with torment. Funny how something that should feel so good can feel so painful when the circumstances aren't right. And our circumstances are definitely not right. But I squeeze his hand anyway, letting him know I'm feeling exactly what he's feeling, and I'm just as torn as he is. Ledger drops his forehead to mine, and we both close our eyes and just silently breathe through whatever this moment is. I can feel everything he's not saying. I can even somehow feel the kiss he's not even giving me. But if we slip back into the moment we shared last night, it would rip that wound open even wider, until that's all I am. He knows just as much as I do that this isn't a good idea. What are you gonna do, Ledger? Hide me in your closet until she's 18? He looks down at our hands, still linked together, and shrugs.
It's a huge closet.
There's only a beat of silence before it's sliced in two by my laughter. He grins, and then leads the way through his dark house and back to his truck.
Chapter 30. Ledger. I'm in my office, processing payroll, processing my thoughts, processing all the mistakes I've made in the last few weeks. Roman was right when he said I could have paid her off if I really wanted her to leave. Maybe I should have, because the more I'm around her, the more false hope I'm giving her. The Landrys won't come around to the idea of accepting her anytime soon. And if she stays here and continues to work, it's putting us both at risk of getting caught. I don't know what I was thinking hiring her in the first place. I thought she could hide out in the back. But Kenna isn't the kind of girl you can hide. She stands out. Someone will notice her. Someone will recognize her. And then we'll both feel the consequences of this lie. I take out my phone and text Kenna. Come to my office when you have a second. I stand up and pace for the entire 30 seconds it takes her to make her way back to my office. I close the door behind her and then walk over to my desk and sit on the edge of it. She stands near the door, and her arms are folded. She looks nervous. I don't mean to make her nervous. I point to the chair in front of me, and she walks hesitantly toward it and then sits. I feel like I'm in trouble, she says. You aren't in trouble. I've been thinking about what you overheard Roman say. And I feel like I should let you know that you don't have to come to work anymore. She looks surprised. Am I being fired? No, of course not. I inhale a breath in preparation for the honesty I'm about to spill. We both know I hired you for selfish reasons, Kenna. If you ever get to the point where you want to leave town and you need money, all you have to do is ask. You don't have to work for it. She's looking at me like I've just punched her in the gut. She stands up and starts pacing while she processes this conversation. Do you want me to leave town? Fuck. I brought her in here to try to make her life easier, but I'm saying everything wrong. I shake my head. No. I reach out and encircle her wrist with my fingers to stop her from pacing. Then why are you telling me this? I could give her several reasons. Because you need to know you have options. Because if you stay here, someone will eventually recognize you. Because if we keep working together, we'll shatter whatever is left of our flimsy boundary. I don't say any of those things, though. I just look at her pointedly while I run my thumb across her wrist. You know why. Her chest rises and falls with her sigh. But then she jerks her hand from mine at the sudden knock on my office door. I immediately stand up straight, and Kenna folds her arms over her chest. Our reactions make us look really guilty right now. Marianne is standing in the doorway looking back and forth between us. She grins and says, "What did I just interrupt? An employee evaluation?" I walk around my desk and pretend to be occupied by my computer screen. "What do you need, Marianne?"
"Well, this suddenly feels like the wrong moment to mention this, but Leah's here. The woman you were supposed to marry today. She's out front asking for you."
It takes everything in me not to look at Kenna to see how she reacted to that. Somehow I managed to stay focused on Marianne. "Tell her I'll be right out." Marianne backs away from the door, but she leaves it open. Kenna immediately follows her out without looking back at me. I'm confused, because why would Leah be here? What could she possibly want? Is she having more of a reaction to what today was supposed to be than I am? Because I've hardly thought about it. I think that proves it was the right decision. For me, at least. I walk out of my office, but I have to pass by Kenna on my way to the front. We make 2 seconds of eye contact before she looks away. I exit the kitchen and look around the room, but I don't immediately spot Leah. It's a lot more crowded now than when I went to my office to do payroll, so I glance around for a moment before making my way behind the bar. Marianne is at the other end of the room, so I can't ask her where Leah went. Roman sees me and points at a group of guys. "I haven't taken their order yet. Where's Leah?" Roman looks confused. "Leah? What?" Marianne is walking toward me. She grins and leans over the bar when she reaches me.
"Roman was getting swamped, so he asked me to grab you. I was kidding about Leah. I was just trying to build some angst for you because girls love angst. You're welcome."
She picks up a tray full of drinks and glides over to a table to deliver them. I shake my head in confusion. I'm irritated she lied, because now Kenna's mind is probably going in 1,000 different directions. But I'm also relieved she lied. I didn't want to see Leah. I stay and take a few orders and close out 3 tabs, but as soon as Roman is caught up, I head to the back. Kenna isn't in the kitchen. I look around for her, but Aaron motions toward the back door to let me know she's on break. When I push open the door to the alley, I find Kenna leaning against the building with her arms folded over her chest. She looks up at me as soon as I walk outside, and I can see the immediate relief wash over her. She was jealous. She tries to hide it by forcing a smile, but I saw the look on her face before she shoved it away. I walk over to her and mimic her position against the wall. Marianne was lying. Leah wasn't here. She made that up. She narrows her eyes in confusion.
Why would she?
Kenna stops talking, and a small smile spreads across her lips.
Wow. Marianne is messy.
She doesn't seem angry that Marianne lied. She appears impressed. Her smile makes me smile, and then I say, "You were jealous." Kenna rolls her eyes.
"I was not."
"You were." She pushes off the wall and heads for the stairs, but she pauses right in front of me. She faces me, and I can't tell what her expression means. I don't know what she's about to do, but if she tried to kiss me, it would make my fucking night. I'm tired of the back and forth with her. I'm tired of hiding her. I'd give anything to be able to get to know her better without worrying about consequences. To be able to ask her questions that have nothing to do with Scotty or the Landrys. I want to openly kiss her. I want to take her home with me. I want to know what it's like to fall asleep next to her and wake up next to her. I fucking like her. And the more I'm around her, the more I don't want to be apart from her. "I'm putting in my 2-week notice," she says. Shit. I chew on my lip until I'm positive I won't drop to my knees and beg her to stay. Why? She hesitates and then says, "You know why." She disappears back inside the building, and I sit in my fucking feelings. I stare at my truck with an intense urge to drive straight to Patrick and Grace's house and tell them all about Kenna. I want to tell them how selfless she is. I want to tell them what a hard worker she is. I want to tell them how forgiving she is, because every single one of us has been making her life a living hell, yet she somehow doesn't seem to resent us for it. I want to tell Patrick and Grace every wonderful thing about Kenna, but even more than that, I want to tell Kenna how wrong I was when I told her Diem wouldn't benefit from having her in her life. Who am I to say that to a mother about her own child? Who the fuck am I to make that kind of judgment?
Chapter 31. Kenna. It starts raining on our drive home. The rain hitting the windshield is the only sound right now, because neither of us is speaking. We haven't said a word to each other since we were in the alley earlier tonight. I wonder if he's mad that I put in my notice. I don't know why he would be. He's the one who brought it up. But he's so quiet, it's making things uncomfortable. I can't continue to work for him, though. How do we plan for my potential departure when we're starting to crave each other's company? I thought this was messy before, but it's bound to get even messier if I let it continue. There's an unresolved energy moving between us and the truck when he pulls into the parking lot. Sometimes when he drops me off, he doesn't even turn off the engine of his truck. But tonight he does, and he removes the keys and his seatbelt, and he grabs an umbrella and gets out of the truck. It only takes him a few seconds to make it to the passenger side, but in that few seconds, I've decided I don't want him to walk me up. I can walk myself up. It's better that way. I don't trust myself with him. He opens my door and I reach for the umbrella, but he pulls it back.
"What are you doing?"
he asks. "Give me the umbrella. I can walk myself up." He takes a step back so I can get out of his truck.
"No, I'm walking you up."
"I don't know if you should."
"I definitely shouldn't,"
he says. But he keeps walking, keeps holding the umbrella over my head. My breath starts to catch in my chest before we even reach the top of the stairs. I fish my keys out of my purse, unsure if he's expecting to come inside or if he just plans to tell me goodnight. Either choice makes me nervous. Either one is too much. Either one will do. He closes the umbrella when we reach my door and waits for me to unlock it. Before I open it, I turn to face him as if he's going to let me say goodnight without inviting him inside. He points at my door but says nothing. I quickly inhale and then push open the door to my apartment. He follows me inside and closes the door behind him. He's acting so assured right now, the complete opposite of what I'm feeling. I scoop